And his topic is when at the end of the road.
I love you. My name is Randy. I'm an addict. How y'all doing? Thank you, brother, for reading and your style, the way when you read and everybody laughed, it just breaks down walls to allow the real person to come out. You shook the energy that was inside of me because I was a little nervous. I was a little nervous, man, because this is one thing about this convention is we've been getting hit after hit after hit after hit after hit, and I want to continue hitting. I don't want to be the one to strike out. I don't want to be the one to fuck things up, man. We've been getting hit after hit after hit. My intention, my purpose, my goal is to continue that flow. Continue that automatic flow and do my very best to feed you guys straight from the menu of God, because this is a full meal deal. Not just meetings, the full package, the total package of freedom, talking about hit after hit after hit after hit. I love sharing. I love speaking, and I already accepted that I'm not for everybody. But through the keep coming back process, and you keep making the next meeting and the next meeting, somebody is going to give you what you need. Each speaker is unique in their way. And each speaker, a certain speaker might be in the summertime of his life, and you're in the wintertime of your life, and the speaker is trying to dress you in shorts, and you need a coat. And you need a coat, okay? Right now, I'm not even sure what season, what time of my life I'm in, but I am learning how to enjoy where I'm at on the way to where I'm going. I want to thank Ocean City. I heard about y'all. Oh, I heard. I'm from East L.A. I was born and raised in East L.A. I live out here on the East Coast now. I live in New York City. I was born and raised in East L.A., and all we hear over on the West Coast is Ocean City, Ocean City. Oh, man, you got to make it through Ocean City, dog. All kinds of stuff, right? 2011, I'm in Ocean City, splitting a pitch with one of my near and dear friends, Easy from New York, who I met in North Carolina 3 years ago. And we became friends ever since. And sometimes, man, let me explain something. Let me try. I'm going to get in the topic. Matter of fact, I'm going to do a 50-50 pitch. You know what that means? 50-50 pitch means I'm going to give you 50% of my story. And every now and then, I'm going to step out of my story, step aside, and do some educating on this disease called addiction. This is a cold disease that has a way of twisting concepts. The disease is twist. This disease knows how to twist concepts, incoming information, but it's so slick, it doesn't twist it to the point where you will notice it, catch it, and change it. It twists it just enough to get you to accept it and live it. This disease has us thinking that rebelliousness equals freedom. Oh my God, that's a cold joke. This disease will have you thinking rebelliousness equals freedom. And if you look back on your own track record, every time you rebelled, ever since you were 10, 12, 15 years old, what happened, man? There's a price to pay. You guys have been having fun with me. I'm a Chicano. I'm a Mexican, right? Right? I'm a Chicano dude. You guys been fucking around calling me George Lopez, and you guys, all right. Someday you gonna come through L.A. and I'm gonna get you. You guys been calling me Chico and the Man, George Lopez, and you guys been doing your thing and having fun with me, man. It's all good. It's all good. I rode down with Easy, his wife Teresa, Yolanda, and Donna. I met Easy a couple years ago, and then I met his wife. And now today, on the ride over here, man, I got to meet Donna and Yolanda, and I'll get their phone numbers. And the broader your base, the better, the more people you have in your life, the better off you are. Okay? So that's how this thing's been working with me for the last 11 years. I'm 39 years old. I got 11 years and 3 months clean. I was born and raised down in East LA, Los Angeles, California, the east side. My parents are dopings. My mom's a dopin'. My dad's a dopin'. We're heroin addicts. We're old-fashioned shooters. We're tecatos. We're low, stomped-down addicts. We have abscesses. I stole their methadone, and they stole my methadone. And me and my dad will fight over who's going first. And it was just real terrible. My topic is when at the end of the road. My grandmother, Agnes, her name is Agnes. My grandmother's name is Agnes, and she dealt heroin for 35 years out the bedroom window. A real well-known connection in the neighborhood for 35 years in East LA. Everybody knew my grandmother. Okay? My dad is a heroin addict. My mom's a heroin addict. My brother's a heroin addict. I'm a heroin addict. I remember being a little boy watching my parents nod with Motown in the background. And I remember hearing Gene Chandler, Rainbow, in the background. Anybody know who Gene Chandler is, man? Anybody remember that song, Rainbow? Over the rainbow. There's a rainbow in my heart. Reminds me of how we party. I see my dad and mom nod to Rainbow, Motown, The Temptations, Diana Ross and the Supremes, Let Me Go the Right Way, Crossroads. I remember all that music growing up, man. And I would stare at them, and me and my brother didn't shoot dope yet. We were way too young. My brother would grab a chair, roll the chair up against the refrigerator to get me a bowl of cornflakes. There was no milk. I used to eat cornflakes with water. Mm-hmm. And it went like that. By the time I was 17, I'm sitting between my mom and dad, nodding with them, and all of us are listening to Over the Rainbow. My grandmother Agnes got hit 3 times. That's not bad for dealing 35 years. Every time the doors came down and the police would come in and punch people around, one of my aunts took the rap. My family did not let my grandmother go to the penitentiary. So all my aunts been to the joint, my aunt Darlene, my aunt Cookie. I got a cousin named Darlene who's still in the penitentiary. She's been there for 27 years. My aunt Doreen, Flocka, we have nicknames in Cali. Y'all probably got nicknames over here. We got nicknames down in L.A. All my aunts been in the joint. All my family been in the joint, man. That's the type of family that we come from. I done time with my dad. I done time with my brother. I done 7 years in the penitentiary. My dad done 10 years in the penitentiary. My brother Robert done 26 years in the penitentiary. My mom done 16 years in the penitentiary. As a family unit, we done a total of 58 years in the penitentiary in California. I got 11 years clean. My dad has 12 years clean. My mom has 16 years clean. Hold on, wait, there's more. Yes, yes. Yes. My mom has 16 years clean. My dad remarried a woman who has 17 years clean. And my brother Turtle, that done the 26 years, has 2 years clean. Yeah, yeah. As a family unit, we have a total of 56 years clean time, all Narcotics Anonymous. They're all back home. in L.A. I'm on here with my daughter. I'm a single father. Mm-hmm. Will you give me the 5 minutes sign?
Yes.
I'm a single father raising up a beautiful baby girl. Her name is Sylvia Brandy. She's 5 years old. I potty trained her. Mm-hmm. I painted my... We're not in L.A. There ain't no homeboys here. I painted my apartment pink. I want to share that in East L.A., right? I painted my apartment pink because I wanted my daughter to feel comfortable. There's something about the atmosphere. It affects your mood and the environment. That we're the same thing with recovery peace, man. The environment that we're surrounded in, it has an effect on your mood spiritually and mentally. I painted my apartment pink. I got Disney princess rugs. I had James Cagney on one side holding a gun, man. Humphrey Bogart on the other wall. When I brought my daughter home, I got rid of all that, man. And my apartment looked like a daycare center. And I had my daughter in daycare, but I would bring her home and wonder why she... And then I got the idea that she's so comfortable at daycare, and I looked at the way it was set up, so that's how I stole that idea. And there's something about parenting, man. There's something about raising a kid on your own. It's very... I'm tired. I'm so glad I'm glad I'm in another state. I'm so tired, man. You. Okay. I'm in another state. Taking a break from my daughter, being a single parent, man, and there's something about a child where you want to prepare. We're supposed to prepare our child for the road and not prepare the road for our child. There's something about children when they're small. The days are long, but the years are short. And I learned a whole lot from watching my little daughter's interaction with me, with other people. I really believe, man, that God gave us children as the closest thing to understand how He operates continuously in our life, man. I really see God inside children. I see God in that fourth and fifth step. I know steps 2, 3, and 11 talk about prayer and intentionally making that conscious contact and meets an emotional need. But I really see God in steps 4 and 5. When somebody is crying and letting go of pain, all the stuff that we've been through, man, poison doesn't come out pretty. And that's why we cry, man. Something about going from brokenness to healing, there has to be a God in the background behind somebody going from brokenness to healing. A lot of us, like me, have two parents who are dope fiends. When I was a little boy, I wasn't designed to handle that traumatic experience, so I buried my heart at the age of 5 years old. But you still got to live on the surface above ground and go through school and go through things, but you're going through things without a conscience or a heart because you buried it over here. And as you grow through life, man, and then there's women and girlfriends that I had in my teenage years who wondered why they could not connect with me because I got my heart over here as a 5-year-old little boy. I done therapy. I had to find, I needed something else than just the 12 step. I actually went outside to get some help and find out some information because the disease will pop up even when you're doing step work, like a 4-step. This disease will pop up and stir up and make surface the worst memories that we've done on the streets, the most horrible things we've done. This disease has its a way of manifesting its presence and reminding you how you left that person who overdosed because you were fear with the police will do when they get there, how you left children unsupervised in dangerous situations, and you start attacking yourself. I'm here to teach that our job is to understand and treat our disease, not attack ourselves for having it. God does not belittle us for being addicts, neither should we. Part of being out there on them streets, spiritual, mental, physical, part of the spiritual aspect of this disease is what you care about. We don't give a shit about nothing or no one. That's part of the spiritual part of this disease is when you lose your soul and you don't care about no one. Then we get here and we start working steps. And what happens is you start caring about yourself. Then you start caring about the people you know. And big boy stuff, you start caring about people you don't know. We call it the newcomer. or the addict who still suffers. That's how you begin to get spiritually healthy. When you care about yourself, then you care about the people you love and know. Then the next level stuff is you start caring about the people you don't know. I've been hearing nothing but truth from this convention. I've been hearing nothing but truth in this convention, speaker after speaker. Banks, I don't know if they still do it, man. I study a lot. Banks, when banks do trainings and they train their tellers, the banks corporation, when they train their tellers to tell counterfeits, they do these two-week trainings to give them some knowledge on how to tell the difference between counterfeit. And what's interesting is when the banks train their tellers for them 2 weeks, not one time do they allow them to see, look at, or touch what's counterfeit. They only get them with truth because they want their tellers to become so familiar with truth, so familiar with what's real, that when counterfeit does come, they will be able to quickly detect what's counterfeit. It's the same thing in this program, newcomer. We want you to become so familiar with truth, so when the counterfeit comes, you will be able to tell immediately. Immediately, right? It's a disease that lives inside of me. So even when we pray, if this disease is living between my ears, when we pray, guess who else listens? You ever hear, be careful what you pray for? Because you might get it and you don't want to enter a season you're not prepared for. You ever hear, man, be careful what you pray for because you might get it. Once you start praying, we have a disease that is also listening. And this disease will send you his best counterfeit before God sends you the real thing. Okay? Have you ever noticed when you go to the store and you give them a $100 bill and they take this marker and they strike it to tell if it's counterfeit? Well, some of us need to strike the things that are coming in our lives because we be accepting anything. We be accepting anything. Hey, my mom, Virgie, my mom's name is Virginia. My mom been doing, look at Alexa, that's my mom's good friend. Alexa, my mom been doing time since she was 12 years old. My mom did 4 years in prison at 12 years old till she was 16. She paroled. She met my dad. They had me and my brother, man, and then they hooked up and started getting high together. My mom got clean in 1994. She was at a bus bench with these big things, dope sick, and there was a girl named Bertha from Eastside Flats. That's a gang. That's a Mexican gang in East L.A., Eastside Primera Flats. A girl named Bertha that used to do time with my mom since they were 12 years old, and they shot dope together. Bertha gets clean. My mom paroles, absconds, runs from the gate, and she's in East L.A. on First and Soto, sick with these glasses. Here comes Bertha with a year clean and almost walks her by, stops and says, "Virgie, is that you?" My mom is hanging over with saliva. She says, "Yeah, it's me." Bertha takes her home, calls all these detox centers. They ask her to call every day until we have an opening. Meanwhile, Bertha's taking her to meeting after meeting after meeting. My mom kicked in meetings. They call Bertha and say, "Oh, we got a bed. Bring Virgie home." She said, "We don't need that bed. Give it to someone who needs it." And she lived with Bertha for her first year clean. And me, I was still shooting dope and getting high inside abandoned buildings with my dad and my brother. And my mom would come down these alleys with Bertha. And I know some people are in disagreement about that. But my mom used to go to shooting galleries and bring me a pair of socks, bring me a little box of chicken with biscuits. My mom would bring me $5. You know what a pair of socks and $5 does for a dope fiend who ain't got nothing? My mom and dad, I used to nod to Gene Chandler, man. They used to come give me a couple dollars. My mom got clean in 1994. She played a huge role in me getting clean in 2000. I got clean in 2000 inside a treatment center. Me and my dad went through rehab together. Wow. Me and my dad went to treat. We used to lift weights and do kitchen cleanup and step study together, man. Right? This is 2 years earlier, me and my dad was in Chino State Prison together. Now we're in rehab. He stays in the rehab. I leave to go live with my mom on her floor where all good dolphins live. I'm living on mom's living room floor. Could you imagine? I mean, I could see you beautiful people, man. Could you imagine collectively how many living room floors we all must have slept on? How many live where all good dolphins live? My mom told me one thing. She didn't say get a job. She didn't say help pay the rent. My mom said you can live with me as long as you make meetings. That was one of the advantages of having an old school mother. She didn't give a shit about. She said just make meetings, man. Me and my mom were road dogs, and we made a lot of meetings. I ended up getting a year clean and lived in the apartment next door. I didn't want to go too far. She almost escaped twice to Santa Monica. My mom was a beach lady. She tried to leave me twice. I was in the apartment. I was. Look at her. I was in apartment 7. She was in apartment 6. And we did 10 years of N.A. together. I felt a calling on the inside of me. I felt something pumping and moving. Something was calling me, man. Something asked me, okay, there's another direction I want you to go in, man. The reason why I call it a calling, I am convicted in my soul that I am at the center of God's will. So many traffic lights, so many green lights has been happening to me, and it's the reason why I came out here to New York City, man. I've been living out here since September 18th. I'm in pastoral training, okay? Wow. I'm training, being raised up to become a pastor, a minister. I know it's a spiritual, not religious program, but I got to tell you my story, man. I got 11 years clean. I came out here to enter a seminary school, man. I'm training. I'll be out here for 12 more months to get licensed as a minister. Then I'm going to return to Los Angeles and establish my own church, reaching the population of recovering addicts who do not feel comfortable in the traditional churches without losing the reverence of God. Okay, that's the calling that I feel. It's a vision right here. You don't have a vision, you can't move toward it. It's a vision. I see the finish line, man. I had to let go of my apartment, let go of my car, let go of my job, let go of my family, security and support, long-term friendships. My sponsor is from Baltimore. My sponsor is Wallace R. They called him Butch. From West Baltimore, Sandtown. He lives in L.A. now. He probably owes somebody in here money. For $10, I'll give you his number. Because I'm a dolphin. I love my sponsor, man. I love God. I love my sponsor. Things have been happening in my life that is beyond my normal strength. Things have been, something is enabling me and carrying me that is beyond my mental intelligence. Something is looking, how can I go from East L.A. to New York City? Something is carrying me. I don't have the mental intelligence to piece that together. Something is divinely enabling me. My job is to protect what I got from certain mentalities and people. Because if you look in your life, one of the reasons why we are not where we want to be is because of the people you hung around. My job is to protect where I'm at in life and with God from certain mentalities and people. I'll be out here for 12 more months. I do want more friends and more friends and more friends. I'm going to tell this story, then I'm going to shut it down, man. I love stories. I believe they have a deep emotional reach. And the name of this story is called Stone Cutter. It's an old Jewish tradition story. It's about this stone cutter back in the day who was on the side of this mountain, and he's cutting off these big blocks of stone. He's tying them up, putting them on a car, dragging them back to the village, man. He's on the side of this mountain, Melvin, and he's cutting these stones, man. And all of a sudden, he takes a look to the right, and he sees this king with a fancy cloak, a fancy robe with servants all around him fanning his ass. And he's looking at this king. He says, man, that king is more better off than me. That king is more powerful than me. I wish I was that king. He became the king. And as he's strolling, he starts getting hot. He removes his robe. He unloosens his shirt. And he looks up at the sun. He says, man, that sun is beating my ass, man. That sun is more powerful than me. I wish I was the sun. Poof, he became the sun. Powerful energy shooting down rays of vitamins and minerals and growing things from the earth, and he feels real powerful. All of a sudden, here comes a cloud. The sun cannot get through the cloud to hit the floor anymore. He says, that cloud is more powerful than me. I wish I was that cloud. And poof, he becomes this cloud, and he changes shapes and sizes and goes from dark gray to light gray to white, changes all these different colors. All of a sudden, he feels himself going like this. He says, that wind is more powerful than me. He says, I wish I was the wind. And poof, he became the wind, and he's hurling through the village and chasing people around and making the windows open and shut and bringing trees down. All of a sudden, the wind just smashes into something hard. He looks, and it's a mountain. He says, I wish I was that mountain. And poof, he becomes this mountain and sticks his nose through the cloud up into the sun, immovable, broad and base and real tall. 10 minutes later, he hears a chink, chink, chink. He looks on the side of his leg, and he sees this little tiny stone cutter chipping away. He says, man, I wish I was that stone cutter. Poof. He became the most powerful thing of all. He became himself. The moral of the story is our real value lies within being ourselves. My name's Randy. I'm an addict. Thank you for letting me share with you.